You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Friday, 24 January, we got Japanese inflation out earlier, 3.6% versus 2.9% previously, and Bank of Japan raises rates to 0.5%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from Cape Town via Gauteng. On the show today, Sean Dindery from Trive Investments, the Sasol trading update. Just as things look better, updates come and, well, sell off. And then strong cash bolt. Keith McLachlan from Integral Asset Management. Boom in GLP-1 drugs. Question, is this a good investment? And then thoughts from me, big purchases. Don't trust, verify. This podcast is brought to you by StanLib Asset Manager. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb. UK law firm accuses first round of exploitation in car sales commission probe. Sentinel Legal says a ruling in favour of claimants could unlock billions in compensation. Business Day, SA could climb two rating notches in the next 3 years, according to the Bank of America. The global research economist forecasts GDP growth 1.6% for this year. Morning markets, S&P was green, up 0.5%, NASDAQ up 0.2%. Over in the east, green, Sydney 0.01%, Tokyo up 0.6%, Hong Kong 1.7% higher, Tencent 2.25% up. Commodities, also green, gold 2,780, Brent 78.24, platinum 979, palladium 1,028. The rand is $18.44, Bitcoin's $104,000, top 40 opening call, 350 points to the green, that's almost 0.5% higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money, also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Sean Dindery from Trive Investments. Sean, appreciate the early morning time. I was just checking back, as far as I can see, I don't think you and I have chatted, Sasol. It had a good start to the year, breaking up through 100, but trading weaker, and that update yesterday. I mean, some good bits, but I think just not enough of them, and certainly some bits that are worrying markets.
Morning, Simon. I think the Sasol update yesterday was interesting. In my view, I think it was actually a good update. Because if we look at last year, they had a lot of operational challenges, right? So they had the refinery fire, they're having issues with the quality of their coal, and also, you know, the civil unrest in Mozambique, right? But you still see that, okay, their numbers are a bit of a mixed bag when it comes to, you know, the products that they offer. So looking at chemicals, looking at mining and gas, those numbers are not too bad. They're still in line with projections. So for Sasol, for me, I do think that it probably is a good buy, because you can see that they are still managing their strategic objectives while also managing, you know, their operational costs going forward. I mean, even to the fact that despite the numbers, they are still investing in, you know, new projects like the destoning solution in Secunda. Mm-hmm. So I think the market may have panicked a bit, but I foresee maybe potentially a turnaround in Sasol going forward.
I take your point there. I mean, there certainly were some problems on their update, but they're kind of working their way through the list. And maybe that's the part the market should have focused on. The list of problems seems smaller.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, they've really, really come a long way. And I think they're just chomping away one by one, dealing with what they need to deal with, while effectively managing their costs and the, you know, the climate that they're operating in.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I like that. And maybe there's some more opportunity. Let's touch on Cashbuild. Trading update coming from them yesterday. It's been a tough long while for them. I got to say this, I thought, I know we're talking sort of 6% growth, 5% from existing stores, but I thought not a shabby update from Cashbuild.
100%. I think that was a really, really strong update from Cashbuild. But I was even thinking that maybe it's off the backdrop of, you know, inflation is tapering out, interest rate cuts are coming into play. If we even look at the retail sales number that came through earlier in the week, I mean, retail sales were up 7.7%, 7.7% in December, meaning that, consumers are starting to spend. Retailers, or we're seeing a bit of more consumer confidence, let's put it that way, which bodes well for retailers such as Cashbuild and other retailers at large.
That's just it. And we've seen the updates from Mr. Price. We saw Clicks as well. Clicks may be a little light. Mr. Price looked fine. The market, however, has high expectations, and perhaps more than anything, that's just it. We're pricing in almost a robust consumer when we've got an improving consumer.
Exactly. And I mean, but the consumer, I was just thinking of something very interesting. We shouldn't forget that we also had the two-pot withdrawal situation last year. So I think that consumers are becoming a bit more liquid in this environment. So we need to just, wait it out, let it play out. Let's see what the Reserve Bank is going to be doing this year, and let's see what inflation does this year. And I foresee those numbers potentially improving in the next couple of quarters.
It does seem that it's been a very, very tough couple of years, and the worst is hopefully behind the consumer. And now we've got to get back to booming, but I suppose we're on the right way. We'll leave it there. That's Shundan Dairy, Trive Investments. Appreciate the early morning time. Let your money weather the storms with STANLIB Asset Management. Invest in the STANLIB Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio sub-managed by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Keith McLaughlin. He is CIO at Integral Asset Management. Keith, appreciate the time. The GLP-1 drugs, I just realized I'm not actually, I don't know what the GLP part stands for. Anyway, they are the weight loss drugs. As the market's looking at this point, it really is Eli Lilly and Novo Nordisk. I mean, they are the two poster childs at this point for the GLP-1 drugs.
Good morning, Simon. And GLP-1 stands for glucagon-like peptide. It's a synthetic
Yo.
hormone that regulates insulin production by the liver, blood sugar levels, appetite, and everything. And actually, the Novo Nordisk and Eli Lilly were originally spending R&D on these synthetic hormones because their big product lines are actually in diabetes. And in terms of the clinical trials, they found a interesting side effect, and the side effect was weight loss. Because what this does is it slows down your stomach emptying, and therefore reduces your appetite. And if you eat less, well, guess what happens? You lose weight. But touching on those effects, I mean, it's a new market. It's a market as old as time. People wanting to lose weight and look good and do it in the easiest possible way, and not with effort. But these drugs have real effects by reducing appetite. There tends to be about a 15-20% weight loss. But they definitely are not cheap. There's various risks around them, and in fact, there's quite a large R&D pipeline of other pharmaceutical companies coming to the market to build these sort of GLP-1s. And I think the thing is, where we stand right now is, one, these drugs are real; two, that there is a big demand for them. But to quantify the effects in the world is also quite interesting, and how it plays out. And the market share as we stand is Novo Nordisk has 2/3 of the market, and Eli Lilly has 1/3. There are one or two, there's about 1% scattered across a couple other things. But really, it's a Eli Lilly and Novo Nordisk a market at this point.
The challenge there, I mean, having two companies essentially sewed up the market is great. Two problems there. One is, if it's highly profitable, which it is, competition will be coming. The second, of course, we're talking pharmaceuticals, and then at some point those patents expire. There's always a kind of a finite window if you are the leader in a pharma space.
So the R&D pipeline for the drugs, the GLP-1s competing with the existing Eli Lilly and Novo Nordisk drugs, come to market, starts the back end of this year, let's call it early next year, and kind of runs into about 28, 29, and there are multiples of this drug coming. Now, just appreciate a couple of things about the existing drugs in the market. First of all, they take the form of weekly injections. You literally get injected into your stomach, and you cannot self-administer. You have to go to the doctor. So one, that's very uncomfortable. The holy grail of this drug is an oral delivery. Like, for example, Pfizer's working on one where you just take a tablet. And then two, the drugs are very expensive. You know, it ranges from about $900 to about $1,300 per month. And that might not sound like a lot, but translated into rands, that's about $20K a month. And your medical aid is probably not going to cover it. The nature of weight loss is that's a discretionary drug. Unless you have diabetes and using this drug for diabetes, or you're clinically obese and can prove some sort of claim there, the odds are your medical aid is not going to cover it. So it's a big expenditure that's not going to be covered, that's uncomfortable to administer. And in fact, there are side effects here. So this is very much a market up for grabs. The existing players are first mover advantage, but by no means do they have this market wrapped up. And in fact, I'd expect massive product deflation as competing products come to the market.
Well, that's just it. I mean, competing products, which will push price down. But you wrote a point for MoneyWeb earlier in the week, which is talking around eventually they come off patent. And in this case, I mean, obviously Aspen, the plant done Klabecher, is doing generics. You've found Sandoz. Almost the easier way, because they don't have to spend the money. There's the demand for there, and they can do it patent-free at some point in the generics.
Certainly. I mean, one of the challenges with these drugs is in the early days, the demand outstripped the supply. So the FDA, for example, put it on the medical shortage list in America. And what that means, interesting enough, for very logical reasons, if you're on the list of medicines in shortage in America, it means that your patent can be ignored and people can produce their own ones using your formula in order to address the shortage. And so you've had like pharmaceuticals, you've had various pharmacies and the like mixing their own GLP-1s, and you know, which also has led to a spike in black market stuff, a spike in problems, and you know, like where people mix them wrong and other things. But the nature of the beast is, yes, these drugs come off patent, and if the demand is there and someone can produce it cheaper, you know, and it's the same drug chemically, you know, the guys who spent R&D are in trouble.
And Sandoz, which I'd never heard of until you mentioned it on a podcast recently. I mean, essentially, as I understand, they're a generic maker. And you found some a conference they were talking to. They had five or six in their pipeline a couple of years ago. Today, it's 28. This is just going to be, I mean, generics is just ever growing.
It's an exciting industry. I mean, Sandoz is a good example. They were spun out of Novo Nordisk. And although they're a very big generics company, in the generic space for biologicals, the generic equivalent of a biological is called a biosimilar. And it's far more complex to produce. There's actually, and therefore, higher margin, but it legally and patent-wise, it follows the same kind of process. So once someone spent all the R&D, goes off patent, if you know how to make biosimilars, you can be quick to market, you can ramp it up, and you can make very high margin very quickly. With lots of volume. And Sandoz globally is the largest biosimilar player, which is really they're in the center of these really nice tailwinds. There's definitely opportunity in that sector.
And a quick one on Aspen, because as they made an announcement, was it earlier this year, perhaps late last year, that they would be doing some of these in their plants as well?
So that was what my initial impression was, but I was actually incorrect in that article I wrote. I mean, Aspen wrote to me, and we've had an interaction. In fact, it's more a distribution agreement, is my understanding now. So I was wrong in that aspect, but this happens. We sit as outsiders, and we work with the knowledge we have.
No, 100%. Last point. I mean, and it's a second order effects, and I've heard some talk around this. I don't know how much you dug it, but if we've got everyone, you know, eating less, I mean, does this hit McDonald's or the chip manufacturers? And you know, as this plays out, because you know, weight loss, as you said, is as old as time. Everyone wants to weigh a little bit less. Suddenly we get those impacts coming through in other businesses, other industries.
So first of all, quantify the size of the market to quantify the effect. You know, currently there's 20 million people taking GLP-1s. In America, there's 20 million clinically obese people. But there's 100 million just obese people in America. And the drugs being expensive, middle grade, not covering, et cetera, et cetera, you probably, and obesity being higher in developed markets than emerging markets, maybe globally there's about 300 million that will end up taking this drug. That's about 2 to 3% of planet Earth, because there's about 8 billion people on planet Earth. So this is not a drug everyone, everywhere is going to take. It's expensive, uncomfortable, it does have side effects and the like. But, and also, 2 to 3% of planet Earth are not going to suddenly stop eating and drinking. They just eat and drink a bit less. And there's been, you know, Walmart's noticed a shift in their basket where they do, those that buy GLP-1s from Walmart stores tend to buy healthier products, et cetera, et cetera. Interesting enough, also tend to buy more apparel. If you lose a couple sizes on your pants, you buy more pants, not necessarily shoes. But play it through, and there might be some loss of volume. Mondelez, you know, large snack food company, has highlighted that they expect about a 0.5% or 1% loss of volume over 10 years. I think they're talking their book. I think they might have 1% to 2% volume loss over the next 5 years, so a bit worse than they expected, but that's only 1% or 2% volume loss. And then, you know, look into the alcoholic beverages side. I think beers will be worse affected than spirits. Because, and stand back, in the sort of market, the low volume companies, the low margin companies are more volume sensitive. So, for example, beer that runs at about half the margin of spirits, the same volume loss will have a much more dramatic bottom line effect on them. So if you want to understand the effects and or protect your portfolio from it, rather go for the high margin than the low margin. So it'll have headwinds in the alcoholic beverages, in the non-alcoholic beverages side, in the snack side. But, you know, call it 1% to 3% volume losses. What is perhaps more interesting is that, you know, irrespective of what size you are, you probably wear the same pair of shoes, but you will change your pants. So this might lead to outperformance of apparel versus shoes, definitely has second order and perhaps even third order effects. You know, we're still quantifying them, but I've tried to kind of put them in context here.
Yeah, I take your point. Maybe not as big as we think, but when you say apparel, Levi jumps to mind. We'll leave it to there. Keith McLachlan, CIO, Integral Asset Management. Appreciate the time. That's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Are you holding one of these GLP-1 drug makers? They had been doing great. They've come under a bit of pressure. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn, Twitter. The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation-beating returns. Let your money keep working with Standard Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Thoughts for me on big purchases. There's a phrase out that says, trust but verify. And I'm going to say, hang on, don't trust. Verify. Large purchases, I'm talking a house or a car, something like that. And quite simply, get an inspection done. My Twitter is full of people who've been buying vehicles that didn't work. There was an article recently on MoneyWeb about the rebuy cars. Now, there's a cost associated, but here's an example. A friend had an offer on a house, spent 5,000 Rand doing the inspection. The inspector came back and said, there's a damp problem. It's going to cost 150,000 to fix, and that might not 100% work. They pulled out of the deal. So sure, cost 5,000. But saved 150,000. The number of people on Twitter who've got cars which, you know, a 2,000 Rand inspection would have saved pain and suffering. I know we hate this idea of throwing the money out at front. What if we do the inspection and everything's fine? Sure. But what if we do it and things aren't fine? So don't trust, do verify. That's it for today. I was chatting with Ken Yonama yesterday from Scope Prime, talking Mr. Price Update, local consumer for 2025. Asked if you were bullish on SA consumers for the year ahead. Almost half said no, it's still tough. About a third said it's going to be mixed. The rest said yes, looking good. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Manage. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb websites in the app, 6:30 a.m., podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokle, Nicole, to you for your time, guests for the time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Monday. Rooibos.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.